From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to the program. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, covering the biggest news in government and culture from a biblical perspective. And we've got some really important things and updates to talk about on the show today. But first, I've got to start by talking about this past week on Tuesday, Nebraska Family Alliance hosted an event to celebrate life and advance the pro-life movement. And we were so fortunate to get to hear from Abby Johnson as our keynote speaker, the true story behind the hit film Unplanned, which just came out on DVD last week as well, already a bestseller on Amazon. And what an inspirational story and a convicting message that Abby shared with nearly 800 people were in attendance. Nearly 800 people joined us in celebrating life, and I think it's created a lot of momentum for the pro-life movement in Nebraska. We had a lot of pastors and elected leaders in the room, and we hope to be able to share on the program some of what Abby shared with us that night, because it was absolutely the most compelling, convicting, and inspiring pro-life message that I've ever had the privilege of hearing. But that's a win when you have over 750 people gathered to boldly stand for life and to celebrate the pro-life movement. And that's good news, because there is still so much work to be done, both in advancing pro-life policies and also in winning hearts and minds. And that's what I want to start the show by talking about today, because that's really what's at stake. And boy, the other side is going to great lengths to influence young minds and to try to win over the next generation. You know, there's a popular saying that politics is downstream from culture. And our culture has gotten so far removed from our foundational beliefs and family values. And we've known this for a long time, but this past week demonstrated just how bad things have gotten and the lengths that the other side is willing to go to. You know, recently we've talked about how Teen Vogue was using Snapchat to instruct teenagers on how to get abortions without their parents' knowledge, and how other popular social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube are continuing to censor pro-life content. Well, now if you've ever hoped of going to a concert of your favorite popular artist and also hearing a pro-abortion message, then you might be in luck. Because as if entertainment was not already political enough, Planned Parenthood and nearly 140 A-list entertainers are preparing to wrap their concerts around infomercials for abortion and pro-abortion candidates. Leaning on their deep roots in Hollywood, Planned Parenthood will spring its abortion agenda on unsuspecting concertgoers between now and January 2020 as part of its latest pro-abortion campaign. Stars like Katy Perry, Idina Menzel, Lady Gaga, Sarah McLachlan, Demi Lovato, and Nicki Minaj are planning to highlight to their audiences their perception that pro-life laws are wrong and harmful to women, citing in particular the recent influx of heartbeat bills and other pro-life laws across the country. And look, this is, of course, their right to do so. It's their concerts, their platform. They can say whatever they want and hold whatever political and ideological beliefs that they want to, just like everyone else can. But entertainers also are very influential in the lives of many people and are ultimately now planning to encourage their fans to vote for pro-abortion candidates in upcoming elections. And I think that this is really a strategic mistake on their part, and I think it's going to backfire both on Planned Parenthood and their public perception, as well as the entertainers who have aligned themselves with Planned Parenthood and have agreed to help promote them and pro-abortion candidates at their concerts. And look, Planned Parenthood has had a really really bad year. 8 states have already passed heartbeat bills, and others have passed vital abortion pill information laws, like we did here in Nebraska this year with LB 209, which was introduced by Senator Albright and had 25 co-sponsors. And it's such an important bill because it gives every woman seeking a medication abortion a second chance to choose life by requiring abortion providers who are dispensing the abortion pill to tell women that the abortion pill can be reversed. And it's something that has saved already more than 750 lives. And they hate that type of legislation because it sends, one, a pro-life message that people do, in fact, regret abortion even in the immediate aftermath. But it's so important because it provides hope and it makes sure that everyone knows what all of their options actually are and that they still have a chance to save their baby and continue their pregnancy even after starting a chemical abortion. That's why those laws are so important. And we were very, very supportive of that bill at Nebraska Family Alliance and helped champion it through the legislative process. It had to overcome multiple filibusters at every stage, but we were able to get it done. And that's a big win for the pro-life movement. But in addition to that, Planned Parenthood and their pro-choice allies in public office aren't just losing the policy battles. It's also the public perception as well that has taken a big hit recently. It was revealed very publicly that their CEO, who had been on the job for less than a year, was fired because she wasn't pro-abortion enough and that she was wanting to focus on expanding other services and providing real health care instead of always prioritizing abortion. And that wasn't good enough for them, so they fired her. And then on top of that, just 2 weeks ago, Planned Parenthood lost $60 million in government funding when they were revoked under President Trump's Protect Life rule, which prohibits abortion providers or anyone who is encouraging, promoting, or referring for abortions from being eligible to receive those Title X taxpayer funds unless their Title X services are legally, financially, and physically separate from their abortion services, which is just common sense and good policy because those tax dollars under the Title X program are not intended to go towards abortion. And there had been intermingling of funds. There was zero separation. And so now Planned Parenthood has elected not to comply with that policy, costing them $60 million. And so now, in what I think will be their next stumble, they are assuming that the average concert goer is interested in hearing about abortion. At an event where they've spent a lot of money to attend this concert and are just looking forward to having fun and having a good time and being entertained, and now they're going to be inundated with a pro-abortion message. And for concert goers, this is the ultimate bait and switch. You're paying money to hear your favorite popular artist perform, only to be simultaneously bombarded with political spin. It's likely to ruin an evening out for many people. And for entertainers, too, I think it's a risky step, as many concert goers will come to realize that amid an evening of entertainment, Planned Parenthood has been given permission to temporarily take them as political hostages for purely partisan purposes. And I think that this is a mistake on their part because people are so tired and so fed up with everything being made political. It's constantly coming down from Hollywood entertainers and A-list celebrities. And again, that's their right to do so. They can say what they want, but people are tired of it. And now people can't even go to concerts without being bombarded with a political agenda. And I think it's a problem for them because for so long, they have been trying to sell people on the idea that they are all about women's health care. And I think this is only going to add to how people perceive them as being less about actual women's health care and being a healthcare provider and being more of a political operator and putting a political agenda in their pro-abortion beliefs over real health care. But it's important that people are aware of this, especially parents, as kids of all ages are not only listening to these entertainers every day, but also consuming their social media feeds and fawning over their latest entertainment news stories. And parents need to know if their kids are going to these events and what they're going to experience there beyond just the music and entertainment, and how to prepare them for that. And all of this, of course, is not surprising. And I don't think that we need, protests or boycotts or anything like that. I think what we need to do is make sure that we also are being bold in our beliefs and in the public square and engaging culture, and make sure that we too are reaching young people and influencing hearts and minds in our own spheres of influence. We must be bold in speaking to the truth and standing for life and talking about the reality of what abortion is. And we talked about it on last week's show. The debate is no longer about whether or not there is life in the womb. The debate is about whether or not that life deserves protection. And it's not just me saying it. It's not just pro-lifers saying it. It's not just science confirming that. It's now perhaps the most notorious late-term abortionist in the entire country, Leroy Carhart, who runs a clinic right here in Nebraska, who, again, very recently, in an on-camera interview, speaking to an international news reporter, confirmed that he believes that it is a baby and that abortion is, in fact, killing a human baby. And he justifies it by saying that he has no problem with it as long as it's in the womb. But even he does not dispute that it is, in fact, a baby, and that an abortion is taking the life of that baby. And that was such a shocking admission, because although we know it's true, we're so used to hearing the typical flowery language and euphemisms from Planned Parenthood and pro-choice politicians, that to actually hear this directly from an abortionist speaking on camera to an international news reporter, I mean, it should be something that is talked about and highlighted continually, because it completely validates the pro-life position and what pro-lifers have been saying for decades. But Planned Parenthood and all of these Hollywood celebrities that have partnered with them would, of course, never want people to know that. And so it's our job to make sure that that message gets out there. And of course, that's a right way and a wrong way to do things. But it's not just science and reason that are on our side. It's also compassion and love that are on our side. And when people are presented with the truth, abortion loses every single time. And I think there is a great need right now in our country for people of faith to not only talk about these things and the reality of what abortion is, but to step up and actively engage government and culture directly. Because we can see the difference it makes when we look across the country and we see what's happening in places like New York, where earlier this year they passed a law legalizing abortion up until birth and celebrated by lighting the One World Trade Center in pink, or in Virginia, where their sitting governor openly endorsed infanticide. Politics absolutely cannot and should not be the center of our lives, but what we must have is significant Christian influence on government and on culture, because without it, government has no clear moral compass. And when we look around our world today, it's clear that we need that moral compass as much as ever. So I think that what Planned Parenthood and all these A-list celebrities are planning on doing and trying to promote abortion at their concerts is a mistake on their part strategically, but we need to make sure that we're doing our part too, and that we're getting our message out there and influencing people and reaching the younger generations, and doing so with a compelling and compassionate message. And one of our own U.S. senators from Nebraska, Ben Sasse, spoke about this very thing earlier this summer on the floor of the United States Senate. Senator Sasse talked about the rise of pro-abortion extremism across the country and the truth about pro-lifers. And he also talked about the decline in civil discourse in our country and what it's doing and the effect that it's having and how we should be having these debates and these discussions. And he delivers that compassionate, compelling message that I was talking about, the type of message that needs to be out there and needs to be heard. And I really appreciated what he had to share. And so I want to play a clip, just a part of the larger speech that Senator Sasse gave. And so this is an important piece of what he had to share. Take a listen.
We could note the plain, simple fact that it is not pro-lifers who have an ugly link to racism. Rather, since the very beginning, the American abortion industry has been intimately connected to eugenics. This is the origins of the movement. As Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger put it herself, quote, think about this quote, the unbalance between the birth rate of the unfit and the fit is the greatest present menace to civilization, close quote. Sanger's racial opinions are a matter of some dispute, but this part is clear. She intentionally targeted efforts at black neighborhoods in Harlem and in the deep South, and many of the people involved in her efforts took things a step further, going so far as to forcibly sterilize African-American women that they deemed to be unfit to procreate. We could also note that it's in part because of this ugly history that today black women in America are 3.5 times more likely to have an abortion than white women. And in some parts of Senator Gillibrand's home state, black children are actually more likely to be aborted than to be carried to term. Or we could point to the continued eugenic use of abortion, for example, to kill children who have non-life-threatening diseases. In the United States today, 2/3 of all babies in the womb who are found to have Down syndrome are aborted. 2/3 of all babies found to have Down syndrome in the US are now aborted. And in some parts of Europe, the rate is pushing 100%, and there are public ad campaigns in two nations in Europe to celebrate the fact that they've gotten rid of all of their Down syndrome babies. But instead of going point by point, I'll just recommend that anyone who wants to better understand this disturbing history read Justice Clarence Thomas's concurring opinion in Box v. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky last month. But I guess that according to my Senate colleague, perhaps Justice Thomas is one of those racists, you know, those notorious pro-life racists that are stalking America. In their leftward lurch to become the Planned Parenthood candidate, it's not just that the Democrats seeking this office are losing touch with where Americans actually are on the hard questions of abortion or with our fundamental American convictions. It's also that, as my colleague from the state of New York has shown, we're losing touch with even how to do politics like Americans, where you respect the dignity of people you differ with and you argue about the ideas. You don't declare them unfit and an unworthy, unacceptable other side. Americans have always had a genius for talking to each other. In our constitutional system, we set up debate fora like this to be able to facilitate, channel, and elevate debate, even heated, fervorish debate about really sensitive topics. Our framers held firmly to the principle that men and women, in their exercise of reason, could come to agreements by persuasion and by dialogue, even if it took a long time and even if the topics were difficult. Anything less than that is a violation of the basic dignity of our fellow citizens. They knew, our founders knew, that hard political issues should not be resolved at gunpoint. They should be resolved by debate, which starts by assuming the dignity of your counterparty in that debate. We're watching that conviction go by the wayside right now. Slandering pro-life Americans as, in effect, Klan members and Nazis is just a way to crush debate, not to persuade. It's a way of saying that these people, people like my mom, who prays outside abortion clinics, people like my daughters and my wife, who've spent a lot of hours volunteering at crisis pregnancy centers, and people like the overwhelming majority of Nebraskans that I get to represent, or Indianans as the presiding officer now gets to represent. It's a way of saying that these people are so morally repugnant that they don't deserve a voice. They don't deserve to be treated like human beings. They don't deserve to be engaged in debate. They're not people that you could possibly have a reasonable conversation with. This is crazy talk. It's not difficult to imagine where this approach leads. When we lose sight of the intrinsic and inexhaustible dignity of unborn children, we open the door to abortion's violence. And when we lose sight of the dignity of our fellow citizens in debate, we open the door to yet other kinds of violence. I've spent a lot of time with pro-lifers in my life, probably a lot more time than most of my colleagues who are going to be at the Planned Parenthood debate in South Carolina on Saturday. And I'll tell you, what you won't find among these people is partisan caricature. What you will find are people who passionately are devoted to the dignity to every human being, no matter how small or how vulnerable or what disease they might have been diagnosed with. You'll find a lot of Americans, young and old, in the pro-life movement who care deeply about women who are in need. You'll also find a lot of enthusiasm for promising in vitro surgeries and for scientific developments in ultrasound and neonatal technology. You'll find fellow citizens ready to advance the basic American commitment to life through the tools of dialogue, persuasion, and respect. The dehumanization of our friends and neighbors, whether they're in the opposite party or in the womb, destroys our national life together and our national conversation. We need on both sides to be constantly stitching back together that fabric that's been torn asunder.
That is the message that we need to be sharing, that basic American commitment to life and having real, respectful dialogue about these difficult issues. There is so much at stake right now in our country, and the simple reality is that every policy endorses and enforces a belief system, and the laws passed by our representatives affect the lives of real people, and those laws are being influenced by our culture. And that is why we need to be bold in our beliefs and in our speech and in our actions. And there are a lot of ways we can do that, but it starts with each of us. And at Nebraska Family Alliance, we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life by influencing policy, mobilizing prayer, and empowering people. Because together, we can ensure that Nebraska is a state where God is honored, marriages and families thrive, freedoms are protected, and life is cherished. For more information, you can visit our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, and sign up to join our network and take advantage of a lot of great free resources to keep you informed and engaged on these issues that matter most. We'll be back next week, and until then, I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.